Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Fun Man About It is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now! Good evening and welcome to
Ferment About It
on heritageradionetwork.org.
Your journey through all things fermented.
My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
Mary Izett is unable to be with us today. We're very sad about that. She has a love-hate relationship with fireball shots and is quite under the weather today. We are archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on Heritage Radio Network. We are air every Monday at 7 p.m., and we are a journey through all things fermented and are very, very excited to have today's episode.
It's episode 169.
169. That is... That's really long. It's been a fun few years, and I'm so glad you're part of the team.
God. Yeah. I look back through the archives and I'm like, oh man, there's a lot of stuff to choose from for the TBTs.
Oh yeah. I got to do more of that stuff, the TBTs.
Oh no, I got you on that.
Thank you, Rachel. Do you have some events or anything?
I don't have any. Well, you could tell us about this picnic that's going on this weekend.
Picnic.
It's perfect weather for that. Super gross and hot.
Super gross and hot, but it's going to be really awesome out at Croton Point Park, which is about 40 minutes north of New York City. The Homebrewers Picnic, we get together. It's the closest park where we're allowed to drink outside, so we bring a bunch of taps and a bunch of homebrew, and we barbecue. It's at Croton on Hudson, and we will be hanging out all day. If you are in the neighborhood of New York City or Croton on Hudson, come to the park. We rent a bodega every year, and we welcome all of the homebrew clubs or homebrewers or fans thereof to celebrate homebrew.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. Is there a way to RSVP for that?
You can do it. You can go online to Facebook, and if you look up Homebrewers Picnic 2016 Croton Point Park, I think you'll be able to find it, or go to the New York City Homebrewers Guild website. Traditionally, we've hosted it at the New York City Homebrewers Guild, but since we started Brunity, with our umbrella club for all of the New York City homebrew clubs, now it's a Brunity Picnic. So if you look up Brunity, Brewnity, you can find out more information about it as well. On Facebook, the Book of Faces.
The Book of Faces. Okay. Well, that sounds really great. Are you brewing anything right now at home, or are you too busy with all these other professional brewing projects you got?
Pretty freaking busy with that. So the news is that we are closing down Greenpoint Beer Works. The lease is up, and so all the Heartland beers are going to be brewed upstate by Schmaltz. And Kelso is moving over, at least for the time being, going to be brewing some beer out of Chelsea Brewing Company. And so it's just down to two people, me and Bobby Rolandi, and we are closing the thing down, man. It's insane. We have a lot of work that we're doing over there. We brewed our last beer on Friday, and so now it's just about getting these 22 tanks into packaged kegs and going from there. And then the riggers are coming in last week and taking the tanks out of there. They're being kind of being dispersed across the city. Various people have bought different tanks, so... It's going to be very interesting.
Oh, my god!
And then I take possession of my new place on August 1st, so I'm very excited about that, but I'm at the mercy of the DOB as far as how soon we will get Fifth Hammer up and running.
Hopefully sooner than later.
You know that's right.
Greenpoint will be sorely missed.
I miss it already.
Yeah.
Except I'm really excited about the time.
I don't. You've been working now every day. Well, I don't really have any announcements, but I did buy a jar of Marmite over the weekend. Which is...
Have you had it before?
I have not had it before, but I mean, I've had it now. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty good.
Did you get the Marmite XO, the extra-aged Marmite?
No, I did not.
It's pretty strong. I
got whatever they had at the British shop in Cold Spring.
It's pretty fun. It's a great way of reusing yeast.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a It's a byproduct of beer making. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, do you ever could you ever make any?
There.
We could talk to Paxi
about this a little bit. I do want to, and I thought I wanted to do that at 508. Like, we had the opportunity to do it. I had a lot of yeast there, and the chefs were pretty good. But there's a they don't let you know what their Marmite recipe is, and it's a bunch of different kind of secret spices blends kind of thing, and also just a
like
really
KFC.
Complicated process of making it, but that I have no idea what it is.
All right, I'd like to go into that further in the future at some point.
I've thought about it as well. Yeah.
Okay. But you know who could help us out with that is our guest today.
Damn
maybe he
straight.
Knows something about. Not, well, maybe not about Marmite, but definitely about food and delicious food. So today we have Sean Z. Paxton.
Sean Paxton, my man, Sean. How are you doing, Sean?
Hi, how are you?
Hi. It is so great that you're on the show again. You were last on episode...
It was episode...
It was in the 60s.
Yeah, it was like...
About 100 episodes.
It was November 2014, and it was the week before Thanksgiving, and you were telling us about a turkey brining in beer for the holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have so much more to tell us about. You're the homebrew chef, right?
Correct.
And what does that mean?
So, being the homebrew chef, you know, I work with beer, with cooking. You could do it at home. You can do it in a restaurant. It's for professionals and amateurs all alike.
Wow.
I've had the pleasure of having your food many, many times over the years, and it blows my mind every time. Before we go, I mean, all our listeners are not necessarily, they're not hip to the Paxton. Where are you from? How did this start? What kind of got you into doing these beers? Were you a home brewer first? Were you a chef first? Were you how long is your beard and how tall are you?
Oh yes, I've heard that you're taller than Chris and Mary combined.
Front to back or back to front?
Oh my god.
Whatever's
well,
cleanest.
I'm Sean Paxton. I'm known as the homebrew chef, and I have been a professional cook for well over 20 years now. And I started brewing, actually, before I was 21. And I always had a little extra beer left over when you brew it 5 gallons at a batch. And so I started using beer in my food. And since I've been doing this for over 20 years now, there was a lot of stuff that just doesn't exist on the beer cuisine side. And I really wanted to learn more about beer because there's more ingredients in beer than wine or cider. And I always liked the flavor and all the different styles and the history of those beer styles. And so I really started to dive in to create something unique and different and really pay homage to, you know, England and Germany and Belgium, you know, and the food that came out of those countries, you know, from a historical standpoint, you know, that really started to cook with beer and then apply that to our cuisine, you know, which is so international now. And a great way to share it has been my website, homebrewchef.com.
I love it.
Okay. Well, since the last time, also, you've rolled out a new website. So do you want to tell us a little bit about it? About I don't know what it was like before, but it's certainly all spiffy and shiny at the moment.
Well, and that's the thing. Websites change, you know, our design culture and new tools and new resources and new apps and all the other stuff that go with it. So I've been working on a new website for actually about 3 years. And finally found the right designer to work with and partner up with to be able to produce what we have today. And the whole concept is to really try to make cooking easier for you, as well as create better, you know, flavors and to look at beer styles and to be able to search by, you know, appetizer, entree, dessert, all the way through cuisine, through a beer style or even a brewery style. And so we've been really working really hard to create a backbone that can really support, you know, the 1,000+ recipes that I have from all the different menus and dinners I've done all over the country and the world, you know, all the different brewing I've done all over the U.S. as well as the world, and to create one central location for all that. So Homebrew Chef becomes kind of the hub. And then if you go to the chef's table, which you'll see a link on the upper part of your screen, and that will take you to where all the recipes and the blog live. And with that, there's basically over 200 recipes in there right now, and I'm adding between 5 and 10 a week right now. And it's been really exciting because, you know, we have a lot of seasonal recipes. We have seasonal menus. We have seasonal beers that you might have in your fridge that you're like, oh, wonder what this would be good in. And now you have a place to look and to find recipes and ideas and concepts and even substitutions where you'll be able to create a wonderful dinner for you and your family, for friends, for celebration purposes, potlucks, you pretty much name it. You know, like my beer brine turkey recipe, which has been number one on Google before, but all the way through to, you know, tomorrow's National Pumpkin or Pecan Pie Day. So I have a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout pecan pie with a bourbon crust and a malted bourbon whipped cream.
Oh my God! Why can't you be here with that?
That doesn't sound good. I don't know what else I
can
do.
So there's a membership portion of your website as well, right?
Say that again.
There's a membership portion of your website.
There is, and so there is a lot available for free if you want to go just browse the site, and you'll be able to get into a lot of things. You'll be able to see the recipe, but you won't be able to actually look at the actual recipe. So the way it's set up is that you can set yourself up for a free account real easy, and that kind of helps me with bandwidth and also just to limit how many people are kind of in, and not that I ever have a limit per se, but it means you're a little bit more serious, and you actually, the deeper you go into the website, the more features turn on, which is really exciting. So this is the other thing that we've been struggling with and trying to make work, and bandwidth, you know, from a website perspective and servers perspective. So right now, if you sign up for a free membership, you get access to more recipes, you'll get access to new tools, because of the way I also have it set up is that you can go in, and once you have an account, you can actually start saving your recipes and create a online shopping list. And so what's really exciting is that you can actually save all the recipes you would like to make for one meal, or if you're a base member, you can actually do a whole menu planning for the whole week. And it'll tell you when to start making things, and it'll work with you to scale the recipes, because all my recipes are scalable. And what that means is, you, if there's only like four people in your family, or four friends coming over for dinner, or you just want to make something for two people, you can scale it all the way down to that. But I've done dinners for all the way up to 2,000 people, and you can actually scale the same recipe to 2,000, and it'll spit that information out for you as well.
Oh, my gosh. That's very...
And then what's cool, too, is that since I've done so much international work, all the recipes, all the descriptions and techniques are all written in Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Okay.
But at the bottom of each recipe, you can actually convert every recipe from U.S. to metric. So if you work in a metric mindset, you could easily switch it without even having to think about it. It just does it all for you.
That's awesome.
That's like the most practical and accessible recipe, online recipe archive I've heard of in a while.
And this is, Mary, this is where I've struggled, because I see all these other websites that try to cook with beer, and they're not user-friendly because they're not searchable. They're not organized in a way that you could find things and go back to them, versus just a deluge of recipes, and you're not really able to even know, can I trust this recipe? Because, you know, some of these recipes might cost you $10 all the way up to $50 to $100 if you're doing like a prime rib that's been aged, wet aged in your refrigerator with a barley wine kind of a crust on it, and you get this great flavors because of it. But I want to make sure, you know, it's my brand, it's my name, it's my reputation, and I really want to make sure everybody not only has a great recipe, but also the tools to really help make it special for them.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is where it gets really cool, is because you can actually start saving all these recipes into a menu, and then you can actually print out a correlated shopping list of all the recipes and all the ingredients of all those recipes. So it's going to add up all the salt that you need for all five recipes or 20 recipes, all depending on what you're making, because this is where you can make more than a one-course meal, but like a four-course, because I'm known for a lot of my 12-course meals that you guys have been into.
Yep.
And this is where you can actually do that all on my site with all my recipes. And now you have something really unique, because a shopping list, and you can look at it on your phone, you can look at it on your tablet, you can look at it on pretty much anything you might want to do. And your computer screen, you can print it out, and you can take it to the store, and it's super easy for you. And I'm really trying to give you guys some resources that I have not seen on any other website, and even like the big Food Network and Bon Appetit, all the way down to, you know, here's a way that you can create a menu and, you know, a seasonal menu, and even some of them are already done for you, and you can just save them into your own account. And that way you have access to them, and you can even share your menus with other people within the community that I'm creating right now.
Oh, very cool.
Wow, it's almost like you actually want us to cook these recipes.
And that's the thing, because, I mean, I could do a cookbook, and I've thought about doing a cookbook, and I've had publishers ask me to do a cookbook, but then these tools will never translate into a printed something that's on your coffee table or in your bookshelf. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to give you the resources to actually do it. And then what we're also working on is videos. So how to make some of these things and set things up, and how to create, you know, cure and brine and marinade and injection, and how to get those flavors, because the whole thing that I'm really trying to do here is beer cuisine and really help define what beer cuisine is, and also help you as, you know, a chef, a home cook, you know, somebody who loves beer, to use beer and thinking about all the different styles, all the different flavors that make that style unique, whether it's the hops, the malt, the yeast, the additives, you know, fruit, is it sour, is it malty, is it hoppy, and to really use those essence of that beer style into food and use it as an ingredient, not just as a liquid, and to really redefine some of the flavors and how we like to taste food and actually make food better.
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Are you still homebrewing a lot?
Say that again?
Are you still homebrewing a lot and using and designing beers for specifically for food, or are you using beers that are out there?
I'm doing both. So I'm working right now with mostly commercial beers that are in your market, and even I have in each recipe you can actually link. There's links in the recipe for what styles of beer, and that will take you to Beer Advocate's style page for that style, so mm-hmm. you can find a beer in your market, because since I live on the West Coast and you guys are on the East Coast, we might have access to different beers, since, you know, Russian River is my local.
Yep.
But you guys have Brooklyn, which I don't see at all. So now you can take a beer style, and knowing what flavors that beer style has, and here's a great way to find a beer within your market that you can actually use for cooking. And then I'm also expanding all my homebrew recipes, so you can actually, if you are into making beer, you can actually make a beer for a dinner that you make the dinner around the beer that you made, and to really showcase it.
Love it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But I really want to do that.
This is some of the stuff that I don't see anybody else do, and to really help promote beer and not just like, you know, a wine dinner that we see all the time, and all the different wineries and all the high-end restaurants do all these great things with wine, and beer always happens to be that secondary beverage, or, you know, they have a wine list that's 20 pages long, and then there's five beers that happen to be all Pilsners.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You
okay.
should visit Brooklyn sometime, though. We have a lot of the opposite
right.
of that.
The scene is happening. We're going to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back and find out what the Z is in Sean Z. Paxton.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Welcome back to episode 169 of Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. Our guest today is a call-in from Sean Paxton, the homebrew chef from homebrewchef.com. And we were just talking about the wonderful website that he's got, the all-inclusive. It really empowers the people to really
get to actually make the recipes.
Dive into this stuff, man.
That's
it's
right.
Awesome.
Teaches techniques, teaches recipes.
Sean, you've been a giant inspiration for me on all of these fronts and cooking at home and using beer and utilizing beer as a featured ingredient and enhancing dishes and creating harmony and contrast to just make meals that are just insanely greater than the sum of their parts. What are some of the techniques that are some basic cooking with beer techniques that you would say are out there? And then is there anything over the years that you've found
that everybody should know how to do with beer?
Well, that's a great question, because there's a lot to understand about beer that's different than wine or cider or spirits, for that matter, because beer has bitterness, you know, and understanding those hops and that IBU or that international bittering unit. A lot of bottles of beer, they have an IBU number. The lower the number, the means it's less bitter. And if you're doing a lot of, like, long cooking, you really want that number to be lower on the spectrum. I would say below 40 and under is usually a better protocol, because that's, like, going to be, like, your brown ales, your porters, your stouts, even some of your, like, pilsners. You know, I really like brown ales a lot because when they caramelize the malt in the malting process, it actually mimics the caramelization of onions or garlic or even seared meat as the proteins in the meat fibers start to caramelize. That's called the Maillard reaction, and that creates that wonderful, rich flavor that we like so much. And so this is where thinking about the right beer style and understanding the bitterness, so like IPAs, for example, aren't the best beers to cook with, because those hops are what we love about that beer style. And the more we cook it, the more those volatile hop oils and aromas just dissipate off into the air, and it just creates something bitter and more astringent that we don't really care to eat, because I think a lot of people have cooked with an IPA and it really turns them off the whole thing.
Right.
So that's a really big one right there, is understand the bittering units. Number two is how you want to use the beer. So like with my beer brine turkey recipe, we're using beer to infuse the flavor of beer to enhance the turkey along with salt and sugar to create basically a new solution that's basically through osmosis, it's infused into the turkey meat that gives you a 10-degree buffer when you're cooking a turkey. That actually makes it so that it stays moist and tender and also full-flavored. So that's another great way to use beer. You know, marinade, especially right now being summer, you know, I have a recipe for a Blind Pig IPA injected pork butt. Mm-hmm. And by injecting it into the meat, you get all that flavor of the IPA and some of those citrus notes. You know, I like a lot of the IPAs that have more of that citrus, orange, tangerine, lemon, lime, grapefruit kind of flavors that go really well with pork. And we're injecting that on the inside. And since we're slow cooking the pork, we're not really reducing the sauce. We're just kind of, it's simmering or steaming in the meat, which is going to make it super tender and super flavorful.
So this is the place when the IBUs are not too affected, even though it's slow cooked?
Because it's a slow cook, and we're also not reducing the liquid.
Right.
It's actually staying within the meat, because the cooking process, and especially with the bark or the crust of a good pork butt, you're leaving it on the outside. You know, it's leaving it the beer on the inside of the meat. And I do have a couple things where you can cook with some different styles of beer that are higher in that bitterness factor. And this is where, like, a ceviche, something that's cold, refreshing, you know, and the fish or the seafood is basically lightly cooked in citrus juices like lime juice, lemon juice, orange juice, tangerine juice. And then after about 2 hours, the seafood mixture is strained out of that citrus so that that acid isn't cooking the meat anymore. And then you're topping it off with a complimentary beer, usually an IPA that has some of those citrus flavors, and then letting it marinate in that before you serve it, and you get this wonderful, great way to eat your beer.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, that sounds really good.
Also, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but July is National Bean Month. So
of course it is.
I have some wonderful bean recipes as well. We have everything from pinto beans cooked with ham hock, and you get that smokiness of the ham hock. And if you were to add like a smoked porter or even like a German Rausch beer to kind of complement that smoke and really infuse and get that kind of meatiness into your beans, and you get this wonderful side dish versus that side dish you just kind of want to forget about. You know, there's so many different ways to do it, you know, and even like I have a smoked porter and tomato barbecue sauce that, again, we're complementing the flavors of the smoke with a tomato. And to me, smoked tomatoes are wonderful.
Awesome.
And to put that on top of your beef brisket, on top of your pulled pork, on top of your grilled chicken, I mean, you're going to be happy and your guests are going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, that sounds amazing. Do you have any good recipes for garbanzo beans?
I do, actually. We have a beer hummus.
Oh, my God.
I love it.
Oh, my God.
So this is where, again, you can use your beer and, like, a nut brown ale. That nut brown flavor is going to kind of complement what sesame seeds or toasted sesame seeds that become tahini, which is like the sesame seed nut butter. And so you can actually use that brown ale to enhance some of those flavors. Also, I have a smoked garbanzo bean salad that's actually mixed into couscous. So you actually smoke your garbanzo beans after you've cooked them fully or even opened a can and rinsed the can liquid off, and then throw them into your smoker for about an hour to 2 hours. And the garbanzo beans will pick up that smoky, meaty flavor. And then you can toss it into a couscous salad, and you get that wonderful flavor, and you actually get a full protein that way. And it can be vegetarian.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
You have used the word, you like, sounds like you really like smoked things. Is there a good use for smoked beer?
Oh, I love, like, a Rauch beer.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite beers to cook with because it does lend itself to so many different applications. I've done everything from a kind of a pseudo pastrami brine, and you can actually brine tofu in that.
Ooh.
And then sear it off and actually make a Reuben that's vegan that tastes like meat.
With the Rauch beer. I love it.
With the Rauch beer. But then, you know, if smoke isn't your thing, because, like, to me right now with the grill and the weather and being summer in July, we want to eat grilled foods. We want to eat, you know, things where we're outdoors and we're enjoying things, and that becomes part of it, you know. But, you know, since we are almost to that Oktoberfest season, you know, we have all the German beers and lagers, you know, Box and Maibox, that have just kind of been released. And maybe you have a few in your cellar that you can pull out. But, you know, a Doppelbach, a Märzen or Oktoberfest beer, you know, you can use that for schnitzel. You can use that to make into spätzle and then fry that off if you want, or just do it as is, you know, poached from the cooking liquid. But again, I mean, there's so many different things, even like all the way to pie. Like I have a wonderful cherry pie with Rodenbach Grand Cru that you use dried cherries as well as fresh cherries and then a sour cherry jam, since sour cherries are so hard to find nowadays. And all those flavors together, because you're rehydrating the dried cherries with the Rodenbach Grand Cru, which has that raspberry, strawberry, cherry, fig, prune kind of flavor.
Yep.
And you get that nice sourness that's going to actually boost up the acid, which is going to make the cherries shine even more. And then since cherry and almond go so well together because of the cherry pits and those stones, I've actually put some almond flour and a little bit of coriander into the pie crust to accentuate that natural cherry almond flavor that we love so much to make a better cherry pie.
Chris is so happy.
I'm really
squirming in his seat, like, ready to go home and
so
make that
true.
Pie.
It's exactly. It's true.
But this is what's so much fun to me is that there's so much there with food and beer and flavors, you know, and it's really a year-round thing. And, you know, I cook with beer every week, and I'm always playing around with new ideas and new concepts. You know, I write for Beer Advocate magazine, and I've been writing for them for over 9 years now, over 100 episodes or issues. And it's been real fun. I just did a whole thing on egg rolls, did a whole one on Thai noodles. There's all these different things and ideas and techniques that are just continuing to blow my mind, because I'm like, why hasn't anybody ever done this before?
Right, right. And the possibilities are endless with all the different beers coming out
now,
and just like it's great.
Yeah.
Especially like, look at what your local market has today. I mean, look at the beers that we have today versus even 5 years ago.
Right.
I mean, constantly evolving and changing as our tastes are changing. You know, the later hop additions on IPAs to get all those extra flavors and not the bitterness in our IPAs, all the way through to all these new sour styles. You know, it's not just a lambic or a Berliner Weiss, or, you know, we have these American sours that are being really creative with the brewers, you know, and to me, a brewer and a chef has so many similarities, because it's all their interpretation of these raw ingredients and how they're transformed into something really unique and different.
And with all of this, that's why I love your website too, because it's really empowering people to go on their own. It's like, these are starting places, these are things that have really worked for you, but through doing it, you get the experience and you kind of form your own rules and find out your own, you know, what you individually like and how to cook it with it and make it work.
Yeah, because to me, like, these are recipes that have been tested. These are recipes that, you know, I've honed and really tried to describe a step-by-step technique, and even have pictures of how to do certain techniques. And even there is a technique tab on the top of my menu bar that will help you even further to look at certain techniques, and that's going to be always evolving. Plus, there's videos that will help you see more things. And then even if you want to sign up for my newsletter, which you also get if you sign up for my membership, whether it's a free or a base member, you get access to the newsletter, which basically is giving you all the recipes and the beers that we're drinking at that time of year. And that's going to just continue to grow and expand and share all the new recipes that we're working on, and to help you see all the new things that are happening on the website and keep up to date with just a lot of really fun recipes. That I just had a friend of mine who made the cherry pie with Rodenbach Grand Cru, and he came back to me and he's like, that's the best cherry pie I've ever had. And I'm like, well, that was my goal when I made that cherry pie, because my mother-in-law does not like cherries at all, and she went back for seconds.
Oh, man, awesome.
And that, to me, is the validity to cooking with beer, where we're able to use some of these beer styles, whether they're from Europe or the U.S. or South America, or, you know, hops from New Zealand all the way through Europe to, you know, upper Washington area, and we can actually use those flavors and make, like, I have a shake and bake hop fried chicken, where you're actually using hop cones and barley malt into the crust and into the buttermilk to make all these great flavors that we love to drink, and then recreating it into fried chicken, which we love to eat, and now it even pairs better with that IPA.
That's genius.
Oh, my God.
That's my happy, fried chicken is my happy place.
How do you even come up with this stuff?
Well, you know how I am, Chris.
Yes, you know, I do.
I always like to put you in your happy place.
You're the best at it.
How
and that's what's so
up
fun, you know, because it's food. You know, we're the only species on this planet that gets to cook. And why not take that and really express our true, you know, because to me, the gift of me feeding my friends, my family, my guests at a dinner that I do, you know, it's one of the most satisfying things to me, because you guys get to walk away and say, wow, that was cool. You know, and that's my biggest, you know, thing that I walk away with, where I leave you with a memory. I leave you with a moment where you're like, that was good.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to give that same moment to you guys and everybody listening, that when you make a meal, here you go. You know, I want to make sure it's easy for you. I want to take all the hard work out of it for you and give you tools and resources and recipes and techniques to say, here you go, and to really make beer shine.
speaking of techniques, when you're creating a meal, a 12-course meal, what is your kind of approach to, what do you start loud? Do you ease into it? How do you decide where to put? Because I think, where you go on the journey or how you structure the journey is an important thing, and you always just knock it out of the park. Do you have a
Well, this is years and years of experience, and it's a hard one because when you think about 12 courses, some people are like just the pure, physicality of like, how do you eat that much? Well, you kind of break it down to size of your portion, and try to think about it like, 25, 30 bites of food. Okay. And then in that, we kind of want to start lighter on our intensity scale, so we're not going to start out with a big imperial stout. It's too robust, it's too strong, it's too alcoholic, and all those things together will kind of ruin our taste buds for later on in the meal. I went to one dinner here in San Francisco, and they started off with a lobster bisque. And as nice as that sounds, the lobster bisque was super rich, super decadent. And if anything, I was kind of done after that first course, and I had five other courses behind it, and it didn't sit well at all. And after I paid the $400 tab, I walked out of there, and I kind of wanted to throw up. And so it's really critical, and this is some of the stuff I'll be teaching as the website continues to grow now that I have the foundation to kind of build these different things. But this is where you'll be able to learn a lot more about how to do these multi-course meals where you start light and you think about flavors that are going to kind of wake up your taste buds and kind of make you hungry, and then also textures, because, food is just not, a bite of food. It's the interplay of maybe a farro or a pearl barley to give you that chew, that crunch that you can fry, or even like a puff barley, so you kind of get that crunch, but it's light and airy. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of grow and expand on those ingredients and their interplay with the different flavors in the beer style. And every beer dinner I do is different because the beers are different, the location's different, the time of year's different. And so I use all those different things as vehicles to express different flavors and different interactions with the beer and with the food to try to build the meal to become a little richer. So, like, I'm not starting off with lamb or duck. I'm going to start off something maybe with some vegetables, maybe some, like, poached shrimp or lightly smoked scallops, and then build into the heavier, richer things, having like a cheese plate where, people who might be a little bit more hungry have something to kind of pile onto their cracker or their bread, or a charcuterie course where, the cured meats and the pâtés and other things can build and layer, but then, I can still do a beer jam or jelly to help cut some of the flavors, and the intensity on our palate, and even do like an intermezzo where I have, a beer sorbet, or make that with liquid nitrogen right at your table, and when there's, 50, 100 people also dining with you, and you get to see, something made right in front of you, even with all these other things going on, to me that's part of the show. Absolutely. And also to be kind of fun where it's actually playing a integral part where, let's say it's a nice sour beer that I've added just a little bit of simple syrup to, and now we have something that can cleanse your palate and go to the next course, and maybe something a little bit more robust, and maybe a sous vide beef cheek or lamb cheek or something a little bit different where you're having elk or buffalo, and you can kind of build the flavors and also the beers that go with that meat or with that dish, whether it's in the sauce, the vegetable, the starch, and to kind of build those intensities all the way up till dessert, when you're kind of like, okay, but wow, that's really good. And you walk out of there with kind of like a whole new appreciation, because with a wine dinner, you get palate fatigue because the wine, the intensity of the wine, there's no carbonation in wine. Champagne there is, but that's really, very few wines are carbonated, so you don't get that lifting effect off your palate. And so all these things collectively help make that multi-course beer dinner a little bit.
Oh, no.
Sean, did we lose you?
We lost Sean. Pax, are you back?
Hi!
Hey!
Hey! Welcome back.
The joys of being up in the Redwoods.
Yep. We lost you just at the end, and I'm just so freaking hungry right now. I don't know what to say.
I'm really sorry about that. It seems almost unfair, but this is where, you know, if you go to homebrewchef.com and go to Chef's Table and sign up, you know, get my free account, sign up for my newsletter, and you're going to get all these recipes for free. But also, if you want to help support what I'm doing and learn more for less than a pint of beer a month, I'm happy to give you everything that I know, everything that I've learned, 20-plus years of experience doing dinners all over the world, and that's kind of my thing where I want to give back to everybody. I want to give back to this wonderful community that is full of just so many great people and great beers and great brewers that make these great beers and have great food to go with everything.
Here, here. Yeah,
I love that. It all comes back to beer.
Yep, beer and people. Beer is people.
Yeah, beer is people.
And if you personal think about mantra. How much work goes into those beers that we so enjoy. And if anything, the last thing I want to do as a chef is upset a brewer and not highlight their beer and highlight their efforts to get the best hops, to get the best malt, to use the yeast correctly to create this wonderful beverage that we love to drink and really accentuate it versus like, yeah, here's a recipe with a can of beer. I mean, what does that even mean anymore?
Right. And that's one thing along those lines I love about, you know, food and beer and cooking together. The brewer is just a small part of a long chain of people who help put the beer together. I mean, there's the growers
brewers.
And the farmers, the maltster, the people
who
are
make
dealing
the barrels,
it,
the coopers.
And same thing with all food product. And celebrating it the way you do, Paxi, is just amazing, and you make life taste better. Thank you.
Well, thank you guys. And, you know, it's a real treat to share all these things that I take for granted every day. And, you know, the people, my family and my friends. And, you know, I just did like a wonderful Cubano style pork roast. And then I made that into a Cubano sandwich. And let me tell you, I had some friends that were like, can you just move in with me? And so that's some of the next recipes I'll be putting up on the website because they're like, I need to make this next week. I'm like, okay, it'll be up online for you.
Awesome. What's the average update for the website as far as putting new recipes up?
Well, I'm putting up between 5 and 10 a week.
Great.
And then that also includes new blog posts that are highlighting different things, different constructs, some of the same questions you've asked me. I'm already working on blog posts to help define them a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also working on some videos to help people understand things a little bit more and get a little bit more involved as far as techniques and how to satscock a chicken all the way through to how to truss a chicken and a turkey and how to debone a duck and then use the bones to make a wonderful stock. Because this is the other thing, if you start using some of the different malts that give our beer these wonderful flavors, you can actually use those same malts in stock and build that flavor all the way down from the elementary, you know, standpoint of creating your own stocks that are actually cheaper than what you'll ever buy in the store and so much better and utilize everything so that we have less waste and we're using waste. Because a lot of people just throw their chicken bones, duck bones, turkey bones away. We can actually use those with a pressure cooker and actually make an incredible stock that will blow your mind.
Oh, man. I have one last question, only because we got there right now with things that you might be throwing away. What if I make a bad beer? Should I consider cooking with it? And under what conditions would that be, maybe workable?
This is a great question. So it depends on how you messed up your beer. Mm-hmm. If it's just a simple flaw, like you didn't get as many hops as you wanted into it or something, sure, cook with it. But if it does taste, if you really don't like to drink it at all, sometimes you can actually just add a vinegar mother to it and try to make malt vinegar out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could try to reduce it down a little bit and see if that changes things. I've also done some different caramels and some different syrups where you can add maple syrup, brown sugar, regular white sugar. You could add honey with the beer and reduce it down just a little bit, and then you can make like a pancake syrup for it. You can also use that to brush onto like, let's say, a cake layer and then do like a pastry cream with beer and like a chocolate stout pastry cream, and then you can build a cake like that. So there's a lot of different approaches, but the thing is that if it's a bad beer, to me, you need to be, you know, to me, you're not a good brewer unless you can pour a beer down the drain and say, yeah, I messed up.
Yep, here, here, here. Well, Paxton, thank you so much.
Life is short, you know?
Damn straight.
Damn Sean, thank you so much for being on the show. Before you go, can we just have one more quick question?
Yes.
What does the Z stand for?
The Z is Zane.
Zane.
None of us guessed that.
Which is kind of fun.
There's so, money on the table.
There's actually several different Sean Paxtons in the world, so it's actually kind of funny. So there's a magician, there's a shark advocate, and a couple other out there that I'm actually friends with some Sean Paxtons on Facebook. So.
Oh, my God. I'm right up there with you with
pretty
the
funny,
similar
so.
Name thing.
I love it.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you so much. There's so much more to talk about. And everyone, just check out his website, thehomebrewchef.com, and sign up for some awesome recipes.
Damn straight.
Yes.
I love you, man.
I'd love to have you on. And please send me messages or emails at sean@homebrewchef.com if you have questions. I'd love to help you guys. So thank you so much for having me on your show.
Right on. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks.
Much love, Paxi.
Foment about it.
Foment about it over here.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Battle with no winners, war with no winners.